Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man 4, Revenge of the Mountain Man, narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis, Joe Brack, Elizabeth Jernigan, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Andy Clements, Stephen Carpenter, Eric Messer, Tim Carter, Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, Ken Jackson, Ren Casey, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Johan Detweiler, Lily Beacon, Nanette Savard, and Chris Rowan.
Well, that's funny. The door's open.
They had struck as cowards usually do, in a pack, and at night, and when the man of the house was not at home. They'd come skulking in like thieving footpadders, but instead of robbery on their minds, their thoughts were of a much darker nature. Murder.
Hello? Miss Sally? Sally? Sally, wake up! Please! Please wake up!
Smoke?
Stay right here, Miss Sally. Just hang on, okay?
Smoke Jensen was 100 miles away, buying cattle, just starting to drive back to his ranch called the Sugarloaf when he heard the news. He had cut 2 horses out of his remuda and tossed a saddle on one. He'd ride one, change saddles, and ride the other. They were mountain horses, tough as leather, and they stood up to the hard test. Smoke didn't ruin his horses on the long, lonely ride back to the Sugarloaf, didn't destroy them as some men might, but he rode steadily. He was torn inside, but above it all, Smoke remained a realist, as old Preacher had taught him to be. He knew he would either make it on time or he wouldn't, and if the worst happened, there would be all the time in the world to say goodbye to Sally. When Smoke and Sally had married, just after Smoke had totally wiped out the small town of Barry, Idaho, Smoke had used another name. But later, during the Valley War around Big Rock and Fontana, he had once more picked up his real name and beat damn to all who didn't like the fact that he had once been a gunfighter. It had never been a reputation that he had sought out. Rather, it had seemed to seek him out. Left alone as a boy, raised by an old mountain man called Preacher, the young man had become one of the most feared and legendary gunslingers in all the West. Some say he was the fastest gun alive. Some say that Smoke Jensen had killed 50, 100, 200 men. No one really knew for certain. All anyone really knew was that Smoke had never been an outlaw, never ridden the Hoot Owl Trail, had no warrants out on him, and was a quiet sort of man. Now married, for several years he had been a farmer, rancher, and horse breeder, a peaceful man who got along with his neighbors and wished only to be left alone. Now, the night riders had shattered all that. When he saw the snug little cabin in the valley of the High Lonesome, the vastness of the high mountains all around it, Smoke knew somehow that he had made it on time.
Hello, Smoke!
Doc, how is she?
She's gonna make it, Smoke. But it was a close thing. If Billy hadn't gotten to Ralph's as quick as he did, well, it would have been all over here. I have her sedated heavily with laudanum to help her cope with the pain.
Is she awake?
No. Smoke, they shot her 3 times. Shoulder, chest, and side. They left her for dead. She wasn't raped, thank God.
Why did they do it? And who were they?
No one knows. Except possibly Sally. And so far, the sheriff hasn't been able to question her about it.
Bounty hunters, maybe. But there's no bounty on my head. I'm not wanted anywhere that I'm aware of.
Nevertheless, Sheriff Carson believes it was bounty hunters. Someone paid to kill you or draw you out to come after them. The sheriff is with the posse now, trying to track the men.
I'll just look in on her, Colton.
Of course, Smoke.
The doctor's wife, Mona, who was a nurse, was sitting with several other women in the big main room of the cabin. Smoke removed his hat and hung it on a peg by the door. He took off his gun belt and hung it on another peg.
Doc said it was all right for me to look in on her.
Mona nodded and solemnly moved aside. Smoke felt a dozen different emotions as he looked at the pale face of his wife. In his mind, there was love and hate and fury and black-tinged thoughts of revenge, all intermingled with sorrow and compassion. He sat down in a chair beside the bed and gently placed one big, rough hand on his wife's smaller and softer hand. Did she stir slightly under his touch? Smoke couldn't be sure, but he was sure that somehow, in her pain-filled mind, Sally knew that he was there beside her. Now alone, Smoke could allow emotions to change his usually stoic expression. His eyes mirrored his emotions. He wished he could somehow take her pain and let it fill his own body. He took the damp cloth from her head, refreshed it with water, wrung it out, and softly replaced it on her brow. All through the rest of that day and the long, lonely night that followed, the young man sat by his wife's bed. Mona Spaulding would enter hourly, sometimes shooing Smoke out of the room, tending to Sally's needs. Doc Spaulding slept in a chair. The two other women, Belle North and Bountiful Morrow, Smoke and Sally's closest neighbors, slept in the spare bedroom. Outside, Pearlie, the foreman, and the other hands had gathered, war talk on their lips and in the way they stood. Bothering a woman, good or bad, in this time in the West was a hanging matter, or just an outright killing. Little Billy, Smoke and Sally's adopted son, sat on a bench outside the house. Just as the dawn was breaking golden over the high mountains around the Sugar Loaf, Sally opened her eyes and smiled at her husband.
You look tired. Have you had anything to eat?
No.
Have you been here long?
Stop worrying about me. How do you feel?
Washed out.
I don't know what I'm going to do with you. I go off for a time and you get into a gunfight. That isn't very ladylike, you know. What'd your folks back east think? Doc says you're going to be all right, Sally. But you're going to need lots of rest.
Three of them. I heard them talking. I guess they thought I was dead. One was called Daggett.
Hush now.
No. Let me say it while I still remember it. I heard one call another Lapeer. He said that if this doesn't bring you out, nothing will. So tired.
Sally closed her eyes. Smoke waited while she gathered strength. Doc Spaulding stood in the doorway, listening. He met Smoke's eyes and inwardly cringed at the raw savagery witnessed in the young man's cold gaze. Spaulding had seen firsthand the lightning speed of Smoke's draw. He had witnessed the coldness of the man when angered. Fresh from the ordered world back east, the doctor was still somewhat appalled at the swiftness of frontier justice. But deep inside him, he would reluctantly agree that it was oftentimes better than the ponderousness of lawyers jabbering and arguing.
The third one was called Moore. Glenn Moore. South Colorado, I think.
All right. That's all, Smoke. Let her sleep. I want to show you something out in the living room.
Well?
Here.
Aren't those?
These are the bullets I dug from her. They're 44s, aren't they?
Two of them are, yeah. The other one's a 44-40, I believe. Pretty good, Doc.
Well, I've dug enough lead from men in the last couple of years. You should be worried if I couldn't learn the difference. But the 44-40, that's the one from her chest. It came close to killing her, Smoke. And,
You got something else to say, Doc?
Later. Perhaps Sally will tell you herself. That would be better, I'm thinking. And no, she isn't going to die. Smoke, you haven't eaten and you need rest. Mona's fixing you something now. Please, you've got to eat.
The next morning saw Sally well rested and ready to give Smoke the news.
I was waiting to be certain. Dr. Spaulding confirmed it the day before those men came. I'm pregnant, Smoke.
A smile creased his lips. He waited, knowing and sensing that there was more to come.
Colton is leaving it all up to me, isn't he?
I reckon, Sally. I don't know. I do know that your voice is much stronger.
I feel much better. You're not going to like what I have to say, Smoke. Not in one way, that is.
No way of knowing that, Sally. Not until you say what's on your mind.
Oh, I'm probably going to have to go back east, Smoke.
I think that might be best, Sally. For a time.
Sally visibly relaxed. She didn't ask why he had said that. She knew. He was going after the men who attacked her. And she expected that of him.
You're not even going to ask why I might have to go back east?
I would think it's because the doc told you to. But you won't be going anywhere for weeks. You were hit hard. I've been there, too.
I know.
The doc is sure you're with child?
Both of us are. I knew before the doctor.
Discussions of women's inner workings embarrass Smoke, so he dropped that part of it.
Now, tell me why you think you might have to go back east.
I have several pieces of lead in me, Smoke. Colton could not get them all, and he does not have the expertise nor the facilities to perform the next operation. And also, I have a small pelvis. The birth might be a difficult one. There is a new, well, a highly refined procedure that is being used back east. I won't go into the detail about that.
Thank you. Because so far I don't have much of an idea what you're talking about.
Smoke knew perfectly well what she was saying with that laugh. He was, for the most part, until they had married, a self-taught man. And over the past few years, she had been tutoring him. He was widely read, and to her delight and surprise, although few others knew it, Smoke was a very good actor, with a surprising range of voices and inflections. She was continually drawing out that side of him.
Mona's from back east, isn't she?
I'm way ahead of you, Smoke. Yes, she is, and if I have to go, and I'm thinking it might be best, and you know why, and it doesn't have anything to do with the baby or the operation, Mona will make all the arrangements and travel most of the way with me.
That'll be good, Sally. I think you should plan on traveling east.
She knew the set of that chin. Her leaving was settled. Her husband had things to do.
You haven't seen your folks in almost 5 years. It's time to visit. Tell you what I'll do. I'll come out for you when it's time for you and the baby to return.
Oh, Smoke, do you know the furor your presence would arouse in Keene, New Hampshire?
If furor means what I think it does, why should people get all in a sweat about me coming east?
Oh, for sure. Bands would play. You would be a celebrity. The police would be upset.
Why? I ain't wanted back there, or anywhere else for that matter.
Sally could only smile at him. If he knew, he had obviously dismissed the fact that he was the most famous gunfighter in all of the West. That books, the Penny Dreadfuls, had been and still were being written about his exploits. Some of them fact, most of them fiction. That he'd been written up in tabloids all over the world, and not just in the English-speaking countries neither. Her mother and father had sent Sally articles about her husband from all over the place. To say that they had been a little concerned about her safety, for a while, would be putting it mildly.
People don't really believe all that crap that's been written about me, do they? Hell, Sally, I've been reported at 14 different places at once, according to those stories.
If they just believe the real things you've done, Smoke, that is enough to make people very afraid of you.
That's silly. I never hurt anybody who wasn't trying to hurt me. People don't have any reason to be afraid of me.
Well, I'm not afraid of you, Smoke. You're sort of special to me.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'd have to give it a lot of thought if someone was to offer to trade me a spotted pony for you, Sally. Morning, Billy.
Hi. Good morning.
Something on your mind? Shut the door, boy. Sit down.
How is she?
Getting stronger every day.
Are you and Miss Sally both gonna go away?
For a time, Billy. Sally thought about taking you back east with her. But you're in school here, doing well. So Reverend Ralph and Bountiful are going to look after you. You'll stay here at the ranch with Pearlie in the hands. We might be gone for the better part of a year, Billy. So it's going to be up to you to be the man around the place.
The man?
That's right. I figure you've worked hard over the past 2 years. Ain't that right, Pearlie?
What's that smoke?
Billy, he's going to be the man around here.
Oh, yeah.
But aren't you angry, Mr. Smoke?
Angry? About what?
Well, if I'd have just been there sooner.
You and the hands were doing what I asked you to do, pushing cattle up to the high grass. Can't any of you blame yourselves for what happened? You did good, Billy. You got help when she needed it.
It will be all right here, Billy. I don't know what I'd do without you. Your top hand.
Wow. Thanks, Mr. Pearlie.
Well, I'm gonna go make Sally some breakfast. I'll talk to you later, all right, Billy?
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke.
Smoke walked back into the cabin and started cooking breakfast for Sally. Billy went off with Pearlie to do chores. The boy had been legally adopted by the Jensens. Judge Proctor had seen to that. Billy was pushing hard at his teen years, soon turning 13. Already he was a top hand, and even though Smoke discouraged it, he was a good hand with a gun, too. Uncommon quick. Smoke and Sally had adopted the boy shortly after the shootout in Fontana, and now Billy pulled his weight and then some around the Sugar Loaf. He was a good kid, and Lord willing, he would soon have a sibling. It was late spring, 1880, and the West was slowly changing. There would be another full decade of lawlessness, of wild and woolly days and nights, but the law was making its mark felt all over the area. And Smoke, like so many other Western men, knew that was both good and bad. For years, a common-sense type of justice had prevailed, for the most part, in the West. And usually, not always, but usually, it worked. Swiftly, and oftentimes brutally, but it did work. Now, things were changing. Lawyers with big words and fancy tongues were twisting facts, hiding the guilt to win a case. And Smoke, like most thinking people, thought that to be wrong. The coming of courts and laws and lawyers would prove to be both a blessing and a curse. Smoke, like most Western men, just figured that if someone tried to do you a harm or a meanness, you just shoot the son of a bitch and have done with it. Because odds were, the guilty party wasn't worth a damn to begin with, and damn few were ever going to miss them. Smoke judged other men by what they gave to society, as opposed to what they took away from it. If your neighbor's house or barn burned down or was blown down in a storm, you helped him rebuild. If his crops were bad or his herd destroyed, you helped him out until next season or loaned him some cows and a few bulls. If he and his family were hungry through no fault of their own, you helped out with food and clothing, and so on down the line of doing things right. And if a man wouldn't help out, chances were he was just trash. And the sooner you got rid of him, the better. That was Western justice and common sense. And if people back east couldn't see that, well, Smoke thought, well, he really didn't know what to think about people like that. He'd reserve judgment until he got to know a few of them. Smoke let his eyes drift over that part of his land that he could see from his front yard. And that was a lot of land, but just a small portion of all that he and Sally owned, free and clear. There was a lot to do before Smoke put Sally on the steam train and saw her off to the east, and before he started after those who had attacked her like rabid human beasts in the night. And there was only one thing you could do with a rabid beast: kill it.
Smoke?
Morning, Sally. I made you some eggs.
Oh, thank you, Smoke.
Oh, let me get that for you. There you go. And just sit up against these pillows. Here. Breakfast in bed.
Smoke sat by the bed and watched her eat. Slowly, she was regaining her strength and appetite, but she was still very weak and had to be handled with caution. She would eat a few bites and then rest for a moment, gathering strength.
I'm getting better, Smoke, and the food is beginning to taste good.
I can tell. At first, I thought it was my cooking. Your color's almost back to normal. Feel like telling me more about what happened?
It's all come back to me. The doctor said it would. He said that sometimes severe traumas can produce temporary memory loss.
Doc had told me the same thing.
It was close, wasn't it?
You almost died, honey.
I remember the time. 9 o'clock. I was just getting ready for bed. I remember glancing at the clock. I was in my gown. I heard a noise outside, or so I thought. But when it wasn't repeated, I ignored it. I walked in here to the bedroom, and then I heard the noise again. I remember feeling a bit frightened.
Frightened? Why?
Because it was not a natural sound. It was raining, and I had asked Billy, when he came to get the lunch packets for the crew, to move the horses into the barn, to their stalls for the night. Bad move, I guess. If Seven or Drifter had been in the corral, they would have warned me.
I would have done the same thing, Sally. Stop blaming yourself. Too much of that going on around here. It was nobody's fault. It happened, it's over. And it's not going to happen again, believe me. I'll see to that.
I know you will, Smoke. Then the noise came again. It was much closer, like someone rushing up against the side of the house. I was just reaching for a pistol when the front door burst open. Three men. At least three men. I got the impression there were more, but I saw only three. I heard three names. I did tell you the names, didn't I? That part is hazy.
You did.
Daggett, Lapeer, and Moore. Yes, now I remember telling you. The one called Daggett smiled at me. He said, "Too bad we don't have more time. I'd like to see what's under that gown." Then he lifted his pistol and shot me. No warning, no time to do anything. He just lifted his gun and shot me. As I was falling, the other two shot me.
Smoke waited, his face expressionless, but his inner thoughts were murderous.
Just as I was falling into darkness, losing consciousness, I heard one say, "Now the son of a bitch has us all to deal with."
And Smoke thought, "And I will deal with you, one by one, on a very personal basis. I will be the judge, the jury, and the executioner."
Do you know any of these men I mentioned, Smoke?
No. Can't say that I've ever heard of them.
Smoke kept his face blank. He didn't want Sally to get alarmed, although he knew that she knew exactly what he was going to do once she was safely on the train heading east. He also knew that when she did mention it, probably only one time, she would not attempt to stop him. That was not her way. She had known the kind of man he was when she married him. He met her eyes, conscious of her staring at him, and he smiled at her. She held out a hand, and Smoke took it, holding it gently.
It's a mystery to me, honey. I just don't understand it. The valley has been so peaceful for so many months. Not a shot fired in anger. Now this.
Shh. You rest now. Sleep. You want some more laudanum?
No. Not now. The pain's not too bad. That stuff makes my head feel funny.
Lapeer, Moore, and Daggett. Never heard of them, but they're damn sure gonna hear from me.
Smoke didn't leave the Sugarloaf range for weeks. If supplies were needed, one of the hands went into town for him. Smoke didn't want to stray very far from Sally's side. The days passed slowly, each one bringing another hint of the summer that lay lazily before him. And Sally grew stronger. 2 weeks after the shooting, she was able to walk outside with help and sit for a time, taking the sun, taking it easy, growing stronger each day. Smoke had spoken with Sheriff Monte Carson several times since the posse's return from a frustrating and fruitless pursuit. But Monte was just as baffled as Smoke as to the why of Sally's attack and the identity of the attackers. Judge Proctor had been queried, as well as most of the other people around the valley. No one had ever heard of the men. It was midsummer before Dr. Colton Spaulding finally gave Sally the okay to travel.
Hello, Doc. Any news from Boston yet?
I just got some, Smoke. That's why I'm here. It took them long enough to wire back to me, but they did. From the information I've sent them, they've agreed to do a rather risky procedure called cesarean to deliver the baby. But the doctor in Boston wants to examine Sally himself before making the final decision.
But the cesarean's necessary?
I think so. And so does the Boston doctor. But it depends on a whole lot of things.
What's the operation?
It's a surgical procedure used to take the baby if the mother can't deliver normally.
And it's dangerous, isn't it?
Colton didn't know what to say. With Smoke, it was hard to tell exactly what he knew about any given topic. When they had first met, the doctor thought the young man to be no more than an ignorant brute, a cold-blooded killer. But it didn't take Colton long to realize that while Smoke had little formal education, he was widely read and quite knowledgeable. And Colton also knew that Smoke was one of those rare individuals one simply could not lie to. Smoke's unblinking eyes never left the face of the person who was speaking. Until you grew accustomed to it, it was quite unnerving.
Well, it could...
Caesar's mother died from this sort of thing, didn't she?
Well, yes, but how did you know that?
I guess the West can still surprise you.
Well, I suppose so. But, yes, it is dangerous, Smoke. But not nearly so dangerous as when Caesar was born.
Let's hope not. What happens if Sally decides not to have this operation?
One of two things, Smoke. You will decide whether you want Sally saved or the baby.
I won't be there, Doc. So I'm telling you now, save my wife. Pass the word along to this doctor friend of yours in Boston town. Save Sally at all costs. You'll do that, right?
You know I will. I'll wire him first thing in the morning.
Thank you. I'll let Sally know.
Colton watched as Smoke went back inside. He had not fully leveled with the young man about the surgical procedure. Colton knew that sometimes the attendant physician had very little choice as to who would be saved. And sometimes, mother and child both died. They'd come so far in medicine, soaring as high as eagles in such a short time, but doctors still knew so very little and were expected to perform miracles at all times.
Would that it were so.
As the weather grew warmer and the days grew longer, Sally grew stronger and was beginning to show her pregnancy. Several of the women who lived nearby would come over almost daily to sew and talk and giggle about the damnedest things. Smoke would leave the scene when all that gabble commenced. He'd sometimes head into Big Rock. Now, the town of Big Rock was growing just as the gold rush town of Fontana was dying. A couple of nice cafes, a small hotel, one saloon with no games and no hurdy-gurdy girls. There was a lawyer, Hunt Brook, and his wife, Willow, and a newspaper, the Big Rock Guardian, run by Haywood and Dana Arden. There was Judge Proctor, the reformed wino, who was the district judge and made his home in Big Rock, taking his supper at the hotel every evening he was in town. Big Rock also had a church and a schoolhouse. It was a nice, quiet little town, but as some men who had tried to tree it once found out, Big Rock was best left alone. Johnny North, who had married the widow Belle Colby after her husband's death, was, or had been, one of the West's most feared and notorious gunfighters. A farmer rancher now, Johnny would, if the situation called for it, strap on and tie down those guns and step back into his gunfighter's boots. Sheriff Monty Carson, another ex-gunfighter, was yet another gun hawk to marry a grass widow and settle in Big Rock. Pearlie, Smoke's foreman, had married and settled down, but Pearlie had also been at one point in his young life a much feared and respected fast gun. The minister, Ralph Morrow, was an ex-prize fighter from back east, having entered the ministry after killing a man with his bare hands. Ralph preached on Sundays and farmed and ranched during the week. Ralph would also pick up a gun and fight, although most would rather he wouldn't. Ralph couldn't shoot a shotgun worth a damn. Big Rock and the area surrounding it was filled with men and women who would fight for their families, their homes, and their lands. The dozen or so outlaws who rode into town with the thought of taking over and having their way with the women some months back soon found that they had made a horrible and deadly mistake. At least half of them died in their saddles, their guns in their hands. Two more were shot down in the street. Two died in the town's small clinic. The rest? Well, the rest were hanged. The word soon went out along the Hoot Owl Trail. You stayed away from Big Rock. The town is pure poison. Folks there will shoot you quicker than a cat can scat. Smoke caught up with Johnny North, who was in town for supplies. The two of them found Sheriff Carson and went to the Big Rock Saloon for a couple of beers and some conversation.
I've been thinking on it some, Smoke. I knew I'd heard that name Daggett somewheres before, but I couldn't drag it out of my head and catch no handle on it. It come to me last night. I come up on that name down near the Sangre de Cristo range a few years back. Might not be the same fella, but I'm betting it is. Sally's description of him fits what I heard. If it is, he's a bad one. Bounty hunter and bodyguard to somebody. I don't know who. I ain't never heard of the other two men with him.
Yeah, I ain't never heard of any of them. And I thought I knew every gun slick west of the Big Muddy. That was any good, that is.
Daggett don't ride the rim much, and he only takes jobs his boss wants him to take. If this is the same fella, he's from back east somewheres. Came here about 10 years ago, supposed to be from a real good family back there. Got in trouble with the law, had to run. But his family seen to it that he had plenty of money. What he done, so I'm told, is link up with some other fella, set them up an outlaw stronghold. Sort of like the hole in the wall. All this is just talk, of course.
Smoke nodded his head. Something else had jumped into his mind. Something the old mountain man preacher had said one time. Something about the time he'd had to put lead into a fella who lived down near the Sangre de Cristo range. But what was that man's name?
Davidson? Yeah, Rex Davidson.
What'd you say, Smoke?
Rex Davidson.
I really hope he ain't got nothing to do with the attack against Sally.
Why?
What do you know about that name you mentioned?
Nothing. Heard Preacher mention it one time, and one time only. That was years back when I was just a kid. The name is all I know, except that Preacher told me he had put lead into him one time.
So that's it. Well, that clears it up right smart. Finishes the tale I've been hearing for years. I'll just be damned, boys.
The tale?
Yeah, it must have been, at least 20 years back, so the story goes. Rex Davidson was about 20, I guess. Might have been a year or two younger than that. I don't know the whole story, just bits and pieces. But this Davidson had just come into the area from somewheres, California, I think it was, and he thought he was casting a mighty big shadow wherever it was he walked. Now, he was good with a gun, and a mighty handsome man, too. I seen him once, and he is a lady killer. What's the word I'm looking for? Vain, that's it. Pretties himself up all the time. There was a trading post down on the Purgatoire called Slim's, run by a Frenchman. Still there, same guy runs it, only now it's a general store. It sits east and some north of Trinidad, where the Francisco branches off from the Purgatoire. Anyway, Slim's is where I heard most of it. This Davidson was there, bragging about how he was getting rich digging gold and running cattle up between the Isabel and the Sangre de Cristos. Said he was going to build himself a town. Done it, too.
Dead River.
You got it.
Damn good place to stay shut of.
Sure is. Whole damn town is owned by this Davidson and maybe by this Daggett, too. Anyways, this was back, about 60, I reckon. and this mountain man come into the trading post with some pelts he'd taken up near the Episcopa in the Arkansas. Him and Slim was jawing over the price when this Rex Davidson decided he'd stick his nose into the affair. He made some crack about the mountain man's weapons and the way he was talking. This mountain man wasn't no big fella, but size don't amount to a hill of beans when you start getting smart-lipped with them people, as you well know, Smoke.
Smoke nodded his head. He knew all too well the truth in that statement. Mountain men, for the most part, stayed away from people and civilization, keeping mostly to themselves. But God have mercy on your soul if you started trouble with them.
Well, turned out that mountain man was Preacher. Slim told me the Preacher didn't say nothing to Davidson, just ignored him. Well, that made Davidson hot under the collar. He called out, "Hey, you greasy old bastard, I'm talking to you, old man."
He shouldn't have done that.
Preacher turned and stared at the man, waiting for him to say his piece. The man went on about how he was Rex Davidson, a gunfighter who'd filled graves across the country.
Which meant he was either a liar or crazy to say that in public.
Well, he might have been both. That Preacher said as much. Rex called him to draw. Your Preacher shot him in the side before Rex even cleared leather. He'd cocked his sharps while Rex was running his mouth.
He shot him in the side?
Yep. Guess he was feeling charitable that day. Maybe wanted to teach him a lesson. Slim told me Preacher just collected his money for his pelts, picked up his bacon and beans, and walked out the door. Didn't even look at Davidson. There was four or five others in the room drinking rock gut, and they spread the story around about Davidson.
Davidson has hated Preacher and anyone connected with him for years. And one more thing, all them men in that room, it was all backshot one at a time over the years. Only one left alive was Slim.
That tells me that this Davidson is crazy as a Bessie bug.
Damn sure is. What kind of man would hate like that? And for so long, it ain't as if Smoke was any actual kin of Preacher's. Why wait this long to do something about it?
Johnny, you asking me questions I ain't got no answers for.
Well, you can all bet one thing. I'm damn sure gonna find out.
Smoke could tell that Sally was getting anxious to travel east and see her folks. She had tried hiding her growing excitement, but finally she gave in and admitted she's ready to go. Some men, perhaps many men, would have been reluctant to let their wives travel so far away from the hearth of home, especially when taking into consideration the often terrible hardships that the women of the West had to endure when compared with the lifestyle of women comfortably back east, with their orderly, structured society and policemen walking the beat. Why, Sally had even told Smoke of indoor plumbing, complete with relief stations and not just bathing tubs. Smoke couldn't even imagine how something like that might work. He reckoned it would take a hell of a lot of digging, and it would sure be smelly if the pipes were to clog.
You real sure you're up to this thing?
I feel fine, honey, and the doctor says I'm 100% healed.
Well, you're getting a little chubby, though.
Oh, be quiet. What are you going to do if it's twins?
I'm going to take off for the mountains.
Mona says all the travel arrangements are complete. She says we'll be leaving the last part of next week.
She told me. The doc and me will ride down to Denver with you and see you both off.
I'll like that. And then, Smoke?
You know what I have to do, Sally. And it isn't a question of wanting to do it. It's something I have to do.
I know. When will they ever leave us alone?
Maybe never, honey. Except that. Not as long as there's some punk kid who fancies himself a gunslick and is looking to make a rep for himself. Not as long as there are bounty hunters who work for jackasses like Rex Davidson and his kind. And not as long as there are Rex Davidsons in the world.
Didn't you tell me that this Daggett person came from back east?
Yeah. That's what Johnny told me and the sheriff. Came out here about 10 years ago. Are you thinking that you know this fellow?
It might be the same person. Maybe it was a long time ago, Smoke. And not an experience that I wanted to remember. I've tried very hard to put it out of my mind.
Put what out of your mind?
Sally got out of bed and walked to the open window, the curtains ruffling with the slight breeze.
It was a long time ago. I was, I guess 9 or 10. I finally forced myself to remember something else Daggett said that night. He said that he had wanted to see me naked for a long time. Then he grinned. Nasty. Evil. Perverted. Then I recalled that experience so long ago.
Sally?
I was molested as a child. I was not raped, but molested by a man who I believed to be this Daggett person. I screamed and it frightened him away, but before he left me, he slapped me and told me that if I ever told, he would kill my parents. I never told anyone this before.
And you believe this Daggett is the same man?
I'm sure of it now. Shortly after my incident, the man was forced to leave town. He killed the man in a lover's quarrel.
All the more reason to kill the man.
I was not the only little girl he molested. Some were actually raped. It's the same man. That is not something a woman ever forgets.
They still have warrants out for him in New Hampshire, you reckon?
I'm sure they do. Why do you ask?
Maybe I'll bring his head back in a bag. Give it to the police.
Oh, Smoke. You don't do things like that in New Hampshire.
Why? What's the matter with the people back east?
It's called civilization, honey.
Is that right? Sounds to me like they got a yellow streak running up their backs.
Sally shook her head and fought to hide a smile.
If I take him alive, you want me to wrap him up in a fresh deer hide and stake him out in the sun?
Oh, Smoke! How gruesome! What would that accomplish?
Payback, Sally. Sun dries the hide around them, kills them slow. Helps to tie a fresh-cut strip of green rawhide around their heads. That really lets them know that they've done wrong. That someone is right displeased with them.
Oh, I think they would get that message all right.
Almost always, Sally. Your folks back east, they got this notion about treating bad men humanely. That's what I've been reading. But the bad men don't treat their victims humanely. Seems like to me, your folks got things all screwed up in their heads. You don't have crime, Sally, if you don't have criminals.
Sally knew there was really no argument against what Smoke was saying. It was a hard land, this frontier, and it took a hard breed to survive. They were good to good people, and terribly brutal to those who sought the evil way. And who was to say that the hard way was not the right way?
I guess that's why I love you so much, Smoke. You are so direct and straightforward in your thinking. I think you're going to be a most refreshing, cool breeze to my family and friends back in New Hampshire.
Maybe.
Smoke, I'm going to say this once, and I will not bring it up again. I married you, knowing full well what kind of man you are. And you are a good man, but hard. I have never tried to change you. I don't believe that is what marriage is all about.
And I thank you for that, Sally.
I know you are going manhunting, Smoke. And I know that it is something you have to do. I don't always understand, but in this case, I do. My parents and brothers and sisters will not, nor will my friends, but I do.
And you're going to tell them what I'm doing?
Certainly. And you'll probably be written up in the local newspaper.
Seems to me they ought to have more important things to write about than that.
Well, yes. But people back in Keene, well, they don't see men like you very often. Smoke, I know that you take chances that many other men would not take. You're a special breed. I learned early on why many people call you the Last Mountain Man. Perhaps that is yet another of the many reasons I love you like I do. So do this for me. When you put me on that train and see me off, put me out of your mind. Concentrate solely on the job facing you. I know you have that quality about you. I will leave messages at the wire offices for you, telling you how I am and where I can be reached at all times. You try to do the same for me, whenever you can.
I will, Sally. And that's a promise. But I'm going to be out of pocket for a couple of months, maybe longer.
I know. That's all I ask, Smoke. We'll say no more about it.
All right, then. But one more thing before we go.
Yes, Smoke?
I have an idea.
What?
All the hands are gone. This place is ours. But it might hurt the baby.
I bet it won't.
Turned out, Sally was right. Smoke stood watching until the caboose was out of sight. Dr. Spaulding had walked back into the station house. Spaulding and his wife Mona, along with Sally, had ridden the stage into Denver. Smoke had ridden Drifter. He'd not brought a pack animal. He'd buy one in the city. There were already laws in parts of Denver about carrying guns, so Smoke had left his twin Colts back in the hotel room. He carried a short-barreled Colt, tucked behind his belt, covered by his coat. Smoke turned away from the now silent twin ribbons of steel that linked the nation.
See you soon, Sally. See you soon.
Smoke bought 300 rounds of .44s. The ammo was interchangeable between rifle and pistols. He bought a tent and a ground sheet, a coffee pot and a skillet, coffee and beans and flour and a small jug of lard. Bacon, too. He walked around the store, carefully selecting his articles, choosing ones he felt a back east dandy come west might pick up to take on his first excursion into the wilds. He bought lace-up boots and a cap. Not a hat, a cap. He bought a shoulder holster for his short-barreled Colt. He bought a sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun and several boxes of buckshot shells. Smoke inspected several pack horses and chose one that seemed to have a lot of bottom. Then he took a hansom to a fancy art house and bought a dozen sketch pads and several boxes of charcoal pencils. He had not shaved that morning at the hotel and didn't plan on doing anything other than trimming his beard for a long time to come. At a hardware store, he picked up a pair of scissors to keep his beard neat, an artist's beard. He would cut off his beard when it came time to reveal his true identity, when it came time for the killing. Smoke had a natural talent for drawing, although he had never done much with it. Now it was going to come in handy. At the art store, the clerk was a dandy if Smoke had ever seen one, prissing around like a peacock, fussing about this and that, and prancing up one aisle and down the other. Smoke studied the way the clerk walked. Wasn't no damn way in hell he was going to try to walk like that. Some bear might think he was in heat. At a barber shop, he had his hair cut just like the dandies back east, parted down the middle and all greased back. Smoke felt like a fop. He hoped he wouldn't run into anyone he knew until his beard grew out. But in a big city like Denver, must have been 4,000 or 5,000 people in the city, that was unlikely. Smoke, now with pack horse, supplies, and a new look, was ready. His guns were rolled up and stored in a spare blanket, along with the sawed-off express gun. He waited until he got outside of the city before he stuck that damn cap on his head. Then he rode southeast out of Denver, taking his time, seeing the country again. He and old Preacher had ridden these trails back when Smoke was just a boy. There were mighty few trails and places in Colorado that Smoke had not been. But oddly enough, down south of Cannon City, down between the Isabels and the Sangre de Cristo Range, was one area where Preacher had not taken him. And now Smoke knew why that was. The old man had been protecting him. Smoke spent a week camped along the West Bijou, letting his beard grow out and sketching various scenes, improving upon his natural talent. He still didn't like the silly cap he was wearing, but he stuck with it, getting used to the damn thing. And each day he combed and brushed his hair, slicking it down with goop and retraining it. Damned if he really wasn't beginning to look like a dandy. Except for his eyes. Those cold, expressionless, and emotionless eyes. And there wasn't a damn thing he could do about that. Or was there?
Come on, boys. We're going to town. Let's go.
Smoke swung Drifter's head toward the south and slightly west.
Yeah, I'm sure I can find it in Colorado City.
Smoke Smoke stopped in at the fanciest store in town and browsed some, feeling silly and foppish in his high-top lace-up boots and his city britches tucked into the tops like some of them explorer people he'd seen pictures of. But if he was going to act and look like a sissy, he may as well learn the part, except for that damn walk, because he damn sure was going to look mighty funny if he could find him a pair of those tinted eyeglasses. He found several pairs, one blue-tinted, one yellow-tinted, and one rose-tinted.
Which of these do you like, sir?
Oh, what the hell, I'll just take all three.
Thank you, sir.
Smoke put on his red-tinted eyeglasses and walked outside, thinking that they sure gave a fella one different outlook on things.
Well, well, if you ain't just the purtiest thing I ever did see.
Smoke gritted his teeth and started to brush past a half-drunk puncher.
Hey, I was talking to you!
The puncher grabbed Smoke by the upper arm and spun him around. Suddenly, a startled look crossed his face as his fingers gripped the thick, powerful muscles of Smoke's upper arm. Smoke thought of all the grammar lessons Sally had given him and the lessons that the urbane and highly educated gambler Louis Longmont had taught him.
I say, my good fellow, unhand me, please.
Well, that cowboy wasn't quite sure just exactly what he'd grabbed hold of now. That arm felt like it was made of pure oak. But the speech sounded plumb goofy.
What the hell is you anyway?
I, my good man, am an artist.
Artist? You paint pictures?
I sketch pictures.
Do tell. How much you charge for one of them sketches?
Of whom?
Huh?
Whom do you wish me to sketch?
Why, hell, me, of course.
I'm really in a hurry, my good fellow. Perhaps some other time.
I'll give you $20.
That brought Smoke up short. $20 was just about two-thirds of what the average puncher made a month, and it was hard-earned wages. Smoke stepped back, taking a closer look at the man. This was no puncher. His boots were too fancy and too highly shined. His dress was too neat and too expensive. And his guns, two of them, worn low and tied down, marked him. This man could have information.
Well, I might be persuaded to do a quick sketch, but not here in the middle of the street, for goodness sake.
Well, which way you head, partner?
I am but a free spirit, a wanderer, traveling where the wind takes me, enjoying the blessings of this wild and magnificent land.
You sure do talk funny. Yeah, I'm camped on the edge of town. You can sketch me there.
Certainly, my good man. Let us be off. But first, we are to make our way to the local drinking establishment.
What? A bar? For what?
For some spirits. Sometimes subjects tend to get a bit stiff and they appear unnatural on the paper. For the money, I want to do this right.
Well, here we are.
Yes, I do believe the dusk has made the light perfect.
Whatever. You just make me look good.
If you would go to that nearby tree.
Here?
Yes, I think that's good. Now, just lean up against it.
Yeah, like this?
Yes. A mix of pathos and ostentation.
Is that good?
Yes, very.
Hey, we got any more of that whiskey?
We do, yes.
Ah, thanks.
Ah, woo! Bear with me while I get my supplies.
Once in position, Smoke began to sketch.
I am very interested in the range of mountains known as the Sangre de Cristos. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, I damn sure am. What do you want to know about it? You just ask me and I'll tell you.
I am told there's a plethora of unsurpassed beauty in the range.
Huh?
Lots of pretty sights.
Oh! Oh, why didn't you say so in the first place? Damn sure as that.
My cousin came through here several years ago, on his way to California. Maurice DeBeers. Perhaps you've heard of him?
Yo, can't say that I have, partner.
Ah, whew! He stopped by a quaint little place for a moment or two, in the Sangre de Cristos. He didn't stay, but he said it was, well, odd.
It's town?
That's what he said.
There ain't no towns in there.
Oh, but I beg to differ. My cousin wrote me about it. Oh, pity. What was the name? Dead something or other.
Dead River?
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Now, how in the hell do you know?
Smoke dropped his sketch pad and threw his hands into the air. He started running around and around in a little circle.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, dear. Oh, no.
Hey, shut up.
Please, don't kill me.
All right. God damn. Calm down before you have a heart attack, Pilgrim. Hell, I ain't gonna shoot you.
Smoke kept his hands high in the air and forced his knees to shake. He felt like a total fool, but he knew his life depended on his making the act real. And so far, it was working.
Take all my possessions. Take all my meager earnings. But please don't shoot me, mister. Please. I simply abhor guns and violence.
You do what to guns?
I hate them.
Oh, piss. Why didn't you just say that? Well, hell, relax. Don't pee out your fancy britches, sissy boy. I ain't gonna shoot you. I just had to check you out, that's all.
I'm terribly sorry, but I don't understand. May I please lower my hands?
Yeah, just don't start begging. You really is who you say you is, ain't you? Come to think of it, just who the hell is you, anyway?
I am an artiste.
Yeah, we already been through that. Sure as hell no cowboy, I can see that. Your name! What's your name, sissy britches?
Shirley De Beers.
Shirley? That there ain't no real man's name.
Smoke managed to look offended. What he really wanted to do was take the jerk's guns away from him and shove both of them down his throat, or in another part of the outlaw's anatomy.
I will have you know, sir, that Shirley is really a very distinguished name.
Well, I'll take your word for that. Get to sketching, Shirley.
Oh, I simply couldn't. I feel flushed. I'm so distraught.
Sure named you right. All right, Shirley. Well, if you ain't gonna draw my picture, sit down. Let's us palaver.
Oh, I've never played palaver. Oh, you have to teach me.
It means we'll talk, Shirley.
Very well. What do you wish to talk about?
You? I can't figure you out. Now, you's big as a house and as strong as a mule. But if you're pansy, you keep your hands to yourself. You understand that?
Unwashed borscht types have never appealed to me.
Whatever that means. My name's Cahoon.
Pleased, I'm sure.
Now, what's your interest in Dead River, Shirley?
I really have no interest there, as I told you, other than to sketch the scenery, which I was told was simply breathtakingly lovely.
You gotta be telling the truth. You're the goofiest looking and silliest talking person I ever did see. What I can't figure out is how you got this far west without somebody plugging you full of holes.
Why should they do that? I have no malice toward anyone who treats me with any respect at all.
Yeah, like I said, you've been lucky, boy, I sure tell you that. Now then, you over the vapors yet?
I am calm somewhat, yes.
Then get to sketching, Shirley!
When Smoke tossed off his blankets the next morning, the outlaw Cahoon was gone. Smoke had pretended sleep during the night as the outlaw had swiftly gone through his pack, finding nothing that seemed to interest him. Cahoon had searched one side of the pack carefully, then only glanced at the other side, which held supplies. Had he searched a little bit closer and longer, he would have found Smoke's twin Colts and the shotgun. Smoke felt that he had passed inspection, at least for the time being, but he was going to have to come up with some plan for stashing his weapons close to Dead River, and so far, he hadn't worked that part out. He cut his eyes to a large stone and saw a sketch pad, a double eagle on the top page, shining in the rays of the early morning sun. Cahoon had left a note.
You do Farley good... Farley? Oh, Fairly. You do fairly good drawings. I pass the word that you okay. Maybe see you in Dead River. Keep this note to help you get in, Cahoon.
Smoke smiled. He had just passed the first hurdle. Smoke drifted south, taking his time and riding easy. He had stopped at a general store and bought a bonnet for Drifter and the pack horse. The pack horse didn't seem to mind, but Drifter didn't like it worth a good goddamn. Smoke's beard was now fully grown out and carefully trimmed into a fuller Van Dyke, but not as pointy. The beard had completely altered his appearance, and the news was spreading throughout the region about the goofy talking and sissy acting fella who rode a horse with a bonnet and drew pictures. The rider, not the horse. The word was, so Smoke had overheard, that Shirley DeBeers was sort of silly, but harmless, and done right good drawings, too. And Cahoon, so Smoke had learned by listening and mostly keeping his mouth shut, was an outlaw of the worst kind. He fronted a gang that would do anything, including murder for hire and kidnapping, mostly women, to sell to whoremongers. And they lived in Dead River, paying a man called Rex Davidson for security and sanctuary. And he learned that a man named Danvers was the sheriff of Dead River. Smoke had heard of Danvers, but their trail had never crossed. The title of sheriff was a figurehead title, because outside of Dead River, he had no authority at all, and he would have been arrested on the spot, or shot. And if Smoke had his way, it was going to be the latter. Smoke and Drifter went from town to town, community to community, always drifting south toward the southernmost bend of the Purgatoire. Smoke continued to play his part as the city fop, getting it down so well, it was now second nature for him to act the fool. At a general store not far from Quarrelin' Creek, so named because a band of Cheyenne had quarreled violently over the election of a new chief, Smoke picked up a few dollars by sketching a man and his wife and child, also picking up yet more information about Dead River and its outlaw inhabitants.
How's it coming?
Just a few finishing touches, my good sir.
Yeah. Hey, clerk.
Yes, sir?
You here? Outlaws hit the stage outside Walsenburg last week. Beat it back past old Tom's place and then cut up into the Sangre de Gristos.
Yeah, and the posse stopped right there, eh?
Sure did. I reckon it's gonna take the army to clean out that den of outlaws at Dead River. Law just don't want to head up in there. Not that I blame them a bit for that.
Nobody wants to die, that's for sure.
I have heard so much about this Dead River place. Here you are, ma'am.
You do very nice work, young man.
Thank you. And I've also heard that around Dead River is some of the most beautiful scenery to be found anywhere.
You stay out of that place, mister. It just ain't no place for any decent person. You seem to be a nice sort of person.
Surely they wouldn't harm an unarmed man. I am an artiste, not a troublemaker.
Well,
mister, them are bad apples in that place. They'd as soon shoot you as look at you. And that's just if you're lucky. I'd tell you more, but not in front of the woman and child.
Mabel?
Yes?
You take Jenny and wait outside on the boardwalk. We got some man talking to do. Well, some talking to do, at least.
Smoke contained his smile. He could just imagine Sally's reaction if he were to tell her to leave the room so the men could talk. A lady through and through, she would have nevertheless told Smoke where to put his suggestion. Sideways. The rancher looked at Smoke and shook his head in disbelief. Smoke was wearing a ruffle front shirt, pink in color. Tight-fitting lavender breeches, he'd paid a rancher's wife to make him several pairs in various colors, which were tucked into the tops of his lace-up hiking boots, tinted eyeglasses, and that silly cap on his head. Foppish was not the word.
Mr. DeBeers, Dead River is the dumping grounds for all the scum and trash and bad hombres in the West. Some of the best and bravest lawmen anywhere won't go in there, no matter how big the posse. And for good reason. The town of Dead River sits in a valley between two of the biggest mountains in the range. Only one way in, one way out.
And East Pass, the only way in, is always guarded. Three men with rifles and plenty of ammunition could stand off an army forever.
Now, Smoke knew that one way in and one way out business was nonsense. If he could find some Injuns, he'd discover a dozen ways in and out. When he got close to the range of mountains, he'd seek out some band and talk with them.
There have been reports of them outlaws getting all drunked up and dragging people to death just for the fun of doing it, up and down the main street. Some men from the Pinkerton Agency, I think it was, got in there a couple years ago disguised as outlaws. When it was discovered what they really was, the outlaws stripped them naked, nailed them up on crosses, left the men there to die, and they died hard.
Sometimes they'll hang people up on meat hooks and leave them to die slow. Take some days. And it just ain't fitting to speak aloud what they do to women they kidnap and haul in there. Makes me sick just to think about it.
Barrick.
So you should just stay out of that place, mister.
But Mr. Cahoon said I would be welcome.
You know Cahoon?
I sketched him once, yes.
Well, you must have done it right. Because if you hadn't, Cahoon would have sure killed you. He's one of the worst. Likes to torture people, especially Indians and women. He ain't got no use for neither of them.
Well, why doesn't someone do something about it? They sound like perfectly horrid people to me.
It'd take the army to get them out. At least 500 men, probably more than that. But here's the rub, mister. No one has ever come out of there to file no complaints. When a prisoner goes in there, he or she is dead. And dead people don't file no legal complaints. So look, buddy, the fella, whatever. The day'll come when the army goes in. But that day ain't here yet, so you best keep your butt and all parts attached out of there.